And welcome to episode 7 of the NRL Fantasy Amateurs Podcast. As usual, Mark here with Ryan. Ryan, how you doing, mate?
Mark, I am excellent and I'm hopefully sounding crystal clear. How are you?
I am pumped because it's finally football time. It's the first game of the year, like not the first game of the actual season, but the first real game because we all know games where the Dragons play don't really count. So today we are going to do a little bit of an interesting episode. So for a little bit of context, what we actually did was went on to NRL Fantasy Talk. I know a lot of people that listen to the podcast are members of that page. And what we did is go through a lot of the teams that were being posted and pick out some interesting players that we haven't actually managed to speak about yet. And then on top of that, I got a little bit carried away on the scotch last night and put up a couple of Facebook and Twitter posts. So we're also accepting nominations for players to talk about it as well. So there's a nice blend of options coming through here. And basically what we're going to try to do is go through and work out whether these guys are studs or duds, whether they're, you know, good pot options or whether they're actually not points of difference and they're points of weakness. So hopefully we'll be able to set you on the right track.
Studs and duds part two.
That's it. I feel like that could be our thing, studs and duds. So at the end, I'm going to try and remember to summarize the player by saying if they're a stud or a dud, but odds on I'm going to forget it on some of them because I am a shitty host. So all right, let's just jump straight into it with the first option here, Appy Coruscant. So obviously Appy Coruscant went over from Manly to the Panthers last year. Panthers obviously had a really good season and Appy managed to put up an average around 60 points. So he comes into this season priced that way. Ryan, do you see any value in taking Appy for round one?
Yeah. So, I mean, like you said, he's coming in priced at 60. When looking at him, like he did have a couple of like, you know, 60 minute games, you know, where he was getting a bit of a rest. So I sort of had a look at like just his, 70 plus minute games and he averaged 63.5. So, you know, I can see that maybe there's a tiny bit of value there. Like, you know, the Panthers are probably going to be very good again. Appy really suits that attack. So, I mean, I could see a tiny bit of value there, but you know, at the same time, there's so many good hooker options out there. Like, is he one you really want to be starting with?
Yeah, and I mean, that's a pretty good question to be asking. So if you look at, I actually went a little bit further and I just isolated out his 75 plus minute games and that average got boosted up to almost 67 points. So he actually, in 80 minutes, he actually averaged more than what Damien Cook did if you only isolate the 80 minute games out last year.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so I mean, if you're somebody who's starting with Cook, Appy isn't going to play Origin unless Cook's injured. So Appy not only averaged more across 80 minutes, he also isn't going to play Origin. So the argument could be made because Appy's a significant price decrease from what Cook is, that you could actually make the argument to go to a Coruscant. He's, what is he, 50K less, 49K less.
Yeah, no, it's a strong argument. I think the reason why I didn't really look at those like just 80 minute games is because like he had a lot of, you know, like 75 minute games where, you know, like he had an 85 and 76 and a 46 and 70. I don't know. Like the only games I really took out were his sub 70 minute games, but like I can see what you're saying. That like, you know, he is quite a bit cheaper than Cook and, you know, that money can be used, you know, quite well elsewhere if you want to, you know, spread it around the team a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think it's probably one of those things where common sense would tell you that Cook's the way to go. He's got a higher ceiling. I think Appy's biggest score was in the 80s, whereas Cook's well and truly capable of cracking the ton. Mm-hmm. So it might be a situation where you're looking there and you really need 50 grand. You know, you need to pull 50 grand out of your team to fund a massive upgrade somewhere else. And you're looking at guys, you might be able to get a guy who averages 40 instead of a guy who averages 35. Whereas that, you know, you might trade down and not actually lose any points there with Appy. You probably lose a ceiling, but you might not lose the floor or the average. So definitely an interesting one straight off the bat. I can't remember what team it was that I actually saw Appy in there, but I sort of went, oh, that's, you know, I don't think I'd get Appy. And then now that I've sort of looked at him, I'm curious now. So I've got another guy in Andrew McCulloch there at the moment, who I think is probably going to average pretty close to what Appy is, and he's another 80K down again. So, you know, I don't necessarily see myself justifying getting him, but I can certainly see the appeal if you want somebody with a track record last year. I think it was 14 games there. So, you know, he did have, you know, a good chunk of his games that were good minutes. So next, it was 11 games, not 14.
Mm. Well, I mean, at least with Appy, you know, that when they say he's going to be out for a month, he'll be back the next week.
Oh my God, I forgot about that. All right. Cool. So, yeah, no, definitely seeing the appeal to Appy. Next guy on our list, also a hooker, Josh Hodgson. So, obviously, Josh Hodgson played the first 8 and a bit weeks last year before going down to injury. He was on track for his worst ever fantasy season since he joined the NRL before he got injured. And even without the injury score, he was sort of his average was really in the toilet compared to what he'd done in the past. Where do you see Josh Hodgson this year, right?
Yeah, he's an interesting one because he's sort of, you know, been all over the shop season to season. Like his best seasons were 2019 and 2016 where he averaged 50. And then in between that, 2017 and 2018, like they both came out to an average of 45. So it's sort of interesting there, like the consistency from like comparing those two season sets where they both came out to the same. Like you said, 2020 was only averaging about 41.5. And like I know you were saying a couple of weeks, so it might have been last week or 2 weeks ago, about George Williams, how when he plays with Hodgson, you know, his scoring appears to go up. Maybe the inverse is true for Hodgson, that his scoring goes down when he plays with Williams.
Yeah, well, I mean, there is something to the fact there, you know, like with in the years past, they've sort of really relied on Hodgson, whereas Whiten's really sort of come into his own, and Williams being an international half, I think maybe they're just not relying on him as much. Hodgson's never been a big tackle bot. He does miss the odd tackle, and they've got a couple of pretty hard-working big men in the middle as well. So I don't necessarily see the appeal in a guy like Hodgson where for 100K less you can have a guy like Brayley.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you know that Brayley is going to tackle his heart out. You don't really have to rely on some of the extra things that Hodgson does. I think a lot of people just see the brand appeal. Like Josh Hodgson is a known brand, so people will gravitate towards that name over, you know, some lesser known guys. Yeah, like if he could get back to that, you know, 2019, 2016, where he was averaging 50, like he's obviously quite a bit of value, but I just don't see it personally, like, especially coming back from another serious knee injury. I just think they're a better option, like similar to some other guys we've talked about. Like I just think there's better options out there for less money.
Yeah, no, I certainly don't see any way that I would be trying to fit Josh Hodgson into my team at the moment. That's just me personally. I don't really see what the upside is with him as opposed to some of these other guys that even some players on the list here that are significantly cheaper. So, and the next one of those guys on the list here is actually somebody who I had not even thought about up until about 20 minutes ago when somebody commented on our post on NRL Fantasy Talk. And that's Offahiki Ogden. So Ogden's coming into this year with a break even of 21, so he is quite cheap, under 300K. And he's lost Aiden Tolman. We've got Luke Thompson out for the first few weeks. There's, you know, Adam Elliott running around doing whatever he's doing. And obviously we know Napa's not really a big minute sort of guy. So his PPM is actually quite strong. So having a look at in the games where he's sort of played at least 20 minutes and done something meaningful, his PPM is 0.94. So really 35 minutes a game would be enough to get him more than 10 points worth of upside. Can you see a room for a guy like Ogden to get a 35-minute bench role?
I mean, there's certainly space there for him to get that role. I've had a brief glance at him because, you know, we didn't add him to the list until – you know, like you said, about 20 minutes ago. Just the PPM I'm looking at, like just from his starts, like his starts at prop, it's not too impressive, really. Like he averages about 30 and 41.5 minutes from about 10 starts at prop. And I had a quick look at his reserve grade stats as well when he started in the middle, and it was even less unimpressive. Like I think he averaged about 30-odd and about 50-odd minutes. Like his PPM was below 0.7. Yeah, I don't know. He seems a little bit up and down. Like he can... like he misses quite a few tackles for a middle, and yeah, he's quite capable of pumping out, you know, like that 39 in 44 minutes he had last, you know, 2 years ago, like having that those big PPM gains. But then he seems like he's also very capable of, you know, missing eight tackles in a game and not not producing a big score. He reminds me a little bit of Hetherington looking at his stats.
All right. Well, let me put it to you this way as a sort of an alternate. If you had Ogden and Lenihu side by side, Ogden's about 10K cheaper. Who do you think has more opportunity to win minutes at their club out of the two of them?
Ogden, absolutely.
Yeah. So I've seen a fair few teams that have got Lenihu, and if you do have Lenihu, I definitely would suggest looking at maybe Ogden or even a guy like Paisa Faamasili, you know, for that, you know, 10K less. You're sort of getting the same player. Even with Thompson coming back, he'll come back in round four or whatever like that. And then you got Hetherington, who's capable of playing 50 minutes plus, same with Napa. So maybe there isn't the minutes there. He really needs to average 35 plus minutes to get there. And I'm not 100% confident that he's going to get there. Even in saying that, like, I probably prefer him to Lenihu, but they sort of both seem to me like maybe guys that look better than they are in reality. Another guy who I could almost copy and paste what I just said about Lenihu into this next guy, except he's even worse again in terms of his points per minute. That's John Asiata. So John Asiata comes from the Cowboys to the Broncos with Payne Haas out for the first couple of weeks. They've come out and said that they're interested in having a ball-playing lock and that they might give Asiata a run as their starting lock. Now, John Asiata is an absolutely terrible half, but as a ball-playing lock, I can see the appeal in a footy sense. However, in his fantasy games, I'm looking at his career stats for between 35 and 60 minutes playing in the middle of the field. And his average is 29.8 in over 40 minutes at a PPM of 0.7, which is just absolutely disgraceful for a middle forward. Priced at 22, so he'd probably need to play the entire 80 minutes to get 32 points by the looks of this PPM.
Yeah, when I was doing my notes for the show, I only wrote one thing next to Asiata, and that was PPM is trash.
Yeah, I actually wrote the word disgraceful next to mine, so... Yeah.
Yeah, I was actually surprised to see how bad it was. Whenever he was on the field, like, he always looked like a smaller Tamalolo because he would always come on for Tamalolo, and then I'm like, is that Lot? No, not Sasiata. But apparently he doesn't play like Tamalolo.
No. He looks like Tarzan, plays like Jane. John Asiata. So long story short, anyone with John Asiata, don't get him. Next guy on the list here, Tui Kamakamika. So he came through yesterday, and I know in the fantasy lounge there's a couple of people that were speaking about Kamakamika as a potential option to fill the minutes from Tino. So having a look at his career PPM, mate, this is just dead set. This is a list of players with the worst PPM middle forwards I've ever seen in my life. So Kamakamika, 30 plus minute career games, his PPM 0.83, which is not as unimpressive as Asiata, but still unimpressive in its own right. So realistically, he's coming into the year priced at 28 points, which means he would need 45 minutes plus on average to get 38 average. Is there any way that you can see Kamakamika consistently getting 45 plus minutes in that Storm pack?
I mean, you wouldn't think so, not without, you know, maybe someone going down. Like, you've got Finucane, who we know plays big minutes. You'd expect... you know, Jesse Bromwich and Christian Welch to continue playing decent minutes. So, I don't know. Like,
he's really their
pretty risky
sixth choice middle, because you got those three starters of Welch, Bromwich, and Finucane, and then you got Nelson Asiata-Solomona, and you got Brandon Smith soaking middle minutes. So Kamakamika is playing the sixth middle role. There is a less than 1% chance that he's going to average 45 minutes without injury.
Yeah.
I definitely don't see the appeal for him. I can see him definitely beating his 28 break even. Like, I could see him averaging in the low 30s for sure, like 33, 34, absolutely. But yeah, not 38. Like, there's just, I just don't see him getting there in terms of his PPM. Like, he really needs to, you know, work increase the work rate if he's going to get there, and I'm just not willing to gamble on that. Even though, like, he looks like he's better than 0.8. You know, like when you actually watch him, if you weren't looking at the stats, you would think he was a 1 point per minute sort of guy, don't you reckon?
Yeah, like he definitely runs harder than his PPM, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of guys with really bad PPMs, the next guy on our list is Joe Offahengaui. So last year, Joe Offahengaui averaged 33.7 in 45 minutes. So I don't even want to try and work out what that is, but I reckon that's about 0.75 or something like that. In previous years, though, his career average in 45 minutes was over 40 points. It was 40.5 in 45 minutes. So are we able to just put this terrible – it's essentially a six-plus point decrease in his average. Are we able to put that down to just the Broncos being absolutely horrendous last year?
I mean, it does seem to be the common factor. Like you said, he's priced at 31. He's got a career – PPM when he's playing in the middle of about 0.85. If you take out last year, that rises to about 0.88. So, I mean, let's add on maybe 0.02 for the new rules, actually playing in a team that's not going to get the spoon, you'd hope. You know, maybe I could see that being about 0.99 per minute, like, you know, but, you know, to get there, he's probably going to need about 50 minutes, which is quite possible, like in this Tigers pack. You know, maybe there is a little bit of value there if you can get back to the Offahengaui of old and not the Broncos wooden spoon old Joe.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, in that price range of middles, it's really him, the next guy that we're going to talk about, which is Matt Lodge, and Cole Matangi is sort of that bracket of guys. If the bench looks friendly for the Tigers and Lodge, I'm not expecting him to get the minutes, and Cole Matangi doesn't get the start and they use Jacob Host or something like that, which is possible, I'll probably have a bit of a look at Offahengaui. I think at the moment in that range, Cole Matangi is definitely my first choice. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple of pretty good back row options. And the way my team's structured, I don't really have room for a guy like Offahengaui. But he's certainly interesting to me if the Tigers can do all right this year. I mean, I've got them penciled somewhere around 12th, though, so...
Yeah, like the Tigers, they're like pretty much their biggest problem. Like, shout out to Rugby League Eye Test on Twitter. Like, they do, you know, good work digging into some of this deep stats. But their biggest problem last year, the Tigers, was go forward. Okay. You know, they were one of the worst teams in terms of meters gained, and like the props in terms of, you know, their meters gained as well. So like, they're really in need of someone to step up and, you know, drive that pack. And like, they've added, as well as Offahengaui, they've added Tamo as well. So maybe, you know, that combination of these new middle forwards, maybe it can drive them forward a little bit. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's certainly one to keep an eye on. And, I mean, it probably comes back to, you know, if we have a look at the trials and Offahengaui starting over McKaylee and the bench is a bit friendly, and it doesn't look like Twal's going to go the full 80, you know, it's probably a case where if Twal's going to only play 60 minutes and Offahengaui can pump 50, then he might actually return some value. So it's certainly something to keep an eye out on as the off-season develops and we get closer to Teamless Tuesday. But speaking about, obviously, the Broncos being terrible last year, somebody who typified their season last year was Matt Lodge. So Lodge... started the season, got injured, played through a partial ACL tear, which is, you know, impressive and, you know, nothing to take away from that. But his PPM last year was significantly down on years past. And depending on your personal bias, there's probably two different ways that you could look at that. You could look at that and say, yes, he was injured, so we're going to give him a pass on his PPM. And we're going to look at his previous years, which, you know, seems to be the sort of the common attitude towards it. Alternatively, my sort of idea on Lodge is if you look at the way that he plays, he's sort of like your old school rumble up the middle, big, slow to play the ball down type of prop. And the game's really moving away from that sort of guy. Ryan, where do you stand on Lodge?
Yeah, I mean, he's an interesting one because, like you said, like if you just want to give him a pass for last year and look at you know, PPMs of years past, I'd say to, you know, have that 10 points of value and average about 40, he probably needs about 45 minutes a game.
Yeah.
So, like, looking at that Broncos pack when Haas is back how is he getting 45 minutes a game? Like, I personally don't see it. Like, if Haas is getting 60, you know, you have to assume Carrigan and Pangai Jr. are getting at least 50.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, well, and this is the thing, is they don't necessarily need Lodge to play those big minutes, particularly with Pangai back. He's lost a bunch of weight and training the house down and all that sort of stuff and looking really fit. He's playing in the middle. You know, even if Pangai spends a bit of time out on Jordan Ricky's edge, you know, and gives Ricky a break, I still don't necessarily think there's the minutes in that pack for Lodge to be getting the 45. Like, 45 would be what I would suggest will be his ceiling for this year. Based on their team, unless, like, if Alex Glenn went down and they moved Pangai to an edge, and then they're using, well, they've still got Flegler, Asiata, Lodge. You know, one of those guys is actually going to miss out on the team altogether, assuming that they carry one of these, like, you know, TO or one of the bench sort of back rowers, unless they roll with Pangai as their back row cover and just go three props. But then even then, they're sort of splitting the minutes, 30 to 35 minutes each, based on the fact that you got Haas, Carrigan and Pangai soaking 160-plus minutes as the starters. I don't see a path without injuries for Lodge to get a consistent 45 minutes. The first couple of rounds, he probably will while Haas is out, but he's not going to shoot up that 150K, and that's going to equalise out. You know, he's going to have one 27 in 38 minutes, and it's just going to completely destroy any sort of price rises that he's going to be having, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, like we can definitely see him getting those minutes in the first three rounds of the year, but like even if we're generous, like say he averages 50 over the first three rounds, like that's only about 100K in price rises, if that. Like that's still not what you want. And then the moment Haas is back, like that's going to start going backwards pretty rapidly. You might get one more price rise after that, but then... Yeah, like by round five, he's going backwards again.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, you really want to – the one thing I've found with fantasy in the past is it never goes the way that you plan it to. If you have this idea like, yep, I'm going to get this guy in, I'm going to have – you know, let him do 4 or 5 weeks where the price rises, I'm going to trade him out to somebody else, guaranteed you're going to get like 6 injuries in round one, and all your plans are going to be destroyed. You're going to be catching up, trying to make trades to fix your team, and then – you know, all of a sudden, before you know it, old mate's got a break even of 65 and he's starting to move backwards and you got 3 injuries still that you're trying to fix. You know, it's just, you don't want to be putting yourself on a clock. Take guys, like even like the next guy, like I would absolutely prefer the next guy because at least you know exactly what you're going to get out of him to Matt Lodge. And that's Moses Leota. So when I saw somebody talking about Moses Leota, I can't remember who it was. I think it was NRL Fantasy Gurus on Facebook. They highlighted Leota as one of their top 5 middles that they were interested in. And at first I was a bit like, nah, he sucks. And the big thing with Leota is he's always been a low minutes, high PPM sort of impact off the bench guy. Mm-hmm. With Tamu leaving, though, a lot of people are expecting him to take that starting job, assuming that it doesn't go to Matt Eisenhuth. Having a look at him again, he averaged just over a point a minute last year. If he was to play 45 minutes, which is pretty normal for a starting prop, he comes in priced at 34. You know, what are your thoughts on Leota?
Yeah, I've got similar notes to basically what you wrote out. Like a PPM of about 1 in 2020, which is quite impressive. You know, priced at 34. So, like you said, he'd need about 45 minutes a game. And I think he's always, like you said, he's always been that impact middle forward. Like, I actually think if he's coming off the bench, his role will be pretty similar to what it's going to be if he starts. You know, James Tomo only averaged 43 minutes last year. So maybe his minutes increase a little bit. But, you know, in 2020, like he averaged about 33 minutes. So maybe, you know, it goes up about 10, but that's still like, you know, pretty close to not reaching that 10 points of value. Like it's a pretty risky one. Like I think he's always been better as, you know, that short burst impact forward. And with a guy like that, when you need 45 minutes, at least, like there's not a whole lot of margin for error. Like,
no. And the thing is, you got a guy like Eisenhuth there who's built to play big minutes as well. So there's no reason that they actually need to move him out of that 35 minute role at all.
Yeah, exactly. And I think they're better served with him pounding, you know, meters. Like in 33 minutes, he was able to average about 100, like 106 meters last year, which is, you know, pretty impressive. Like there are a lot of, you know, big minute forwards that don't get to 100 meters. You know, just look at the Tigers last year. Like a lot of them were quite poor in terms of meters gained.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I guess that's the thing is, you know, with Leota, we probably know what his role is going to be, as opposed to Lodge, where we're sort of not 100% sure exactly where he's going to land. But honestly, I don't really see either of them being somebody that I'd be wanting to get. And that also applies to this next guy who I've seen in a couple of teams, which is Josh Kerr. So Josh Kerr was pretty much unknown this time last year. Actually, he sort of had his breakout in the Indigenous game last year and then sort of played last year and did really well. Averaged 36 in 45 minutes or thereabouts. Can we see him averaging more than 45 minutes even with the McInnes injury?
I mean, I'm not sure where that where the value comes from. Like even last year, he had quite a few starts at prop and like his ceiling seemed to be about 41 minutes. Yeah, so I'm not too sure where, like, if he can increase that ceiling of 41 minutes. You know, the Dragons still have a few decent forwards there. Like, you'd have to expect Paul Vaughan's going to be commanding the lion's share of minutes. Where do you sort of have him in that rotation?
Yeah, no, I've got him sitting at about 45 minutes starting prop, and then he'll probably split that with probably a guy like Alvaro, I'd say. They'll sort of alternate, and then they'll have Blake Lurie coming in at, like splitting with the lock sort of thing, maybe taking 5 minutes off Paul Vaughan, and then they'll have your bench prop or whatever, the end of the bench guy for 20 minutes or whatever. I just don't necessarily see any upside in him. 45 minutes, he was really good last year in his 45-minute role, and I don't see any need for them to move him out of that. So long story short, probably not necessarily somebody that we're wanting to go with. So we'll just do a little bit of a recap because I've just realised that I did exactly what I thought I was going to do when we haven't bloody started or darted anyone. So just catching up, Appy Korosau was first. We're going to call him a stud. Josh Hodgson is a dud. So is Ofahiki Ogden and John Asiata and Tui Kamikamitha. Joe Offengau is probably a watch and see leaning towards a stud.
Very tentatively.
I'm not. You can hear the confidence in my voice with that. Matt Lodge, Moses Leota, Josh Kerr, all duds. Next guy on our list, Christian Welch. Break even of 40 coming into the season. He sort of started a bit slow and then came on a bit towards the end of the year. Averaged 46 towards the end of the year in his larger minute role, but priced at 40. He really needs to be averaging 50. And that 46.5 was in 51.5 minutes. So, you know, sort of as we spoke about, he'd probably need to be closer to 57, 58 minutes per game to get to that 50 points. Is there any way that you can see Welch doing that?
No, look, I personally can't see any way he gets to that amount of minutes without, like, injury like affecting the game, like some other middle forward you know, getting a concussion. But that said, like last year we saw Bellamy carry, you know, a fourth guy that was lucky to get on the field for 5 to 10 minutes. So even if there is an injury, there's a chance that that person suddenly gets 25 minutes instead of Welch getting 60 plus. Like personally, like I think he's a, you know, really good player, obviously a good PPM, but I think, you know, that mid, like 50 to 55 is sort of his ceiling, and I don't think that's going to be enough.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I can see him averaging about 45 this year, so which is definitely an increase on last year, but I don't necessarily see him turning that into a 50-point average, not to mention, not that I want to, like, I don't plan for injuries, but Welch is significant. You know, he's had a lot of significant injuries in the past, and you can't ignore that. Especially when you're needing everything to go right for that one player. So really I'm happy to put Welch in the dud category as well.
Yeah, I'm sad to agree with you. I've been told that Welch is my doppelganger, so.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he must be a good-looking bloke then.
Oh my gosh. Actually, I can see that a little bit, but not at all. Yeah. If you mean he's tall and blonde, then yes.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's where the comparison came from.
Yeah, okay. Tupanua. Looking likely to get an 80-minute back row spot for the Roosters this year with Boyd Cordner in the head bin. indefinitely, but at least until round 12. That's assuming that Nat Butcher doesn't get that job, which I think we're all just assuming it's going to be Tupanua when it could be Butcher for sure. But let's say it's Tupanua coming in priced at 36, average 43.8 in just under 80 minutes at back row, which is 7 or 8 points of value. Can you see any way that he increases on that?
Yeah, I actually don't think he's a terrible buy. Like, you know, nine starting second row appearances under the new rules last year. He averaged 44.5. He averaged 46 when he was in reserve grade playing second row. So I don't think he's a bad buy. Like, I think there's quite a bit of value there, but there's just cheaper options. Like, you know, you can get Andrew Davey for 100K less and he's probably going to average about the same. Like, he's probably going to be that mid-40s.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Like,
what you're saying is he's a dud.
Maybe a little bit.
I don't want to speak negatively about Tupanua because I feel like he is the sort of person that would actually be a really nice person off the field.
Yeah.
You know, like you just look at him and go, you know what, I bet you're really nice and respectful to people around you. And yeah, but I just, you know, from a fantasy standpoint, he's already priced at 36. The best case scenario is the average is 46, which is 10 points of value. But, you know, there's so much that Roosters pack moves so much. Now, that's not to mention we've got Radley coming back in. It's pretty easy for them to just slip Isaac Louis out there for 20 minutes or something like that, or slip Butcher out there for 20 minutes. You know, there's no guarantee Crichton's going to play 80, but everybody else is sort of, you know, you got priority minutes going to Takiaho and Radley aside from Crichton. So, you know, Tupanua's sort of he'll play 80, but he doesn't need to play 80, and depending on how the game's going or whatever, they might look to give minutes to the guys where their priority is.
Yeah, I can see that. But, I mean, at the very least, Tupanua does fit the fun factor, like just watching his hair fly around as he smacked it. Like, he's
got that going for him. Yeah, absolutely. Mate, if I'm being honest, though, if we're going to start looking at players for their hair, we definitely want to get the next guy on our list, which is Chad Townsend. Did you do that on purpose? You did it on purpose, didn't you?
Always too perfect, wasn't
it? That was slick. That's what professional podcasting sounds like right there.
Just setting you up, mate. Right
up until the point where I pointed it out to everybody. But, mate, Chad Townsend. So, finishing up on Tupanua, Ryan's trying to be nice, but what he's really saying is Tupanua's a dud. Chad Townsend. Coming in 33 average, no Sean Johnson for at least the first month, up to 2 months plus, looking like getting a massive uptick in his playmaking, in-play kicking. He's going to take the goal kicking, not to mention he has the most fabulous hair in the NRL. Is there any, well, I know that there's an appeal in Chad, and I've had him in my team throughout the off-season. Where are you sitting on Chad at the moment?
Yeah, so I think he's quite a good buy and there's quite a bit of value there. So he's priced at 33, which is his worst season ever. He's never averaged below 35 before. But, I mean, if you look at the games last year where he did play 70-plus minutes, he did average 35. So that fits, you know, that career average, because he did have one game where he was injured, another game where he was sent off for just decapitating Ponga, but
I remember that. Yes.
Yeah, so in those games last year, he averaged 150 kick meters. So it seems quite apparent to me that Sean Johnson was taking the lion's share of kick meters. Mm-hmm. If we look at his 2018 season, he played 19 games with Matt Moylan. Moylan averaged 68 kick meters and Chad averaged 274.
Mate, and that's light. There's going to be more than that. There's no way that he's only going to average 270. Yeah. Like he'll be up around 350.
Yeah, precisely. But like, even if you wanted to be a conservative, like say he only averages 240 kick meters, that's an extra 5 points. You add goal kicking onto last year, you know, that's 4 to 6 points. So the Sharks were fifth in points scored last year. So attack's not their biggest problem. You know, that alone gets you to 45. Like, and that's just being conservative with his kick meters. Like if you want to put him over 300, suddenly you're looking at a bloke close to a 50 average and there's quite a lot of value there.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, what's the Sharkies draw looking like early season? Do you know?
Yeah, they've got the Dragons, Raiders, Eels, Cowboys, Roosters, and then the Knights, and then the Bulldogs after that. So it's a little bit up and down.
Okay. It's probably 3 to 4 easy games and 3 to 4 tough games in there, depending on sort of where your rating teams for this year. But, I mean, the good thing with Chad is he's not one of those guys like a Ponga or a Turbo or something like that where they're relying on those attacking stats. What we're looking at with Chad is the base of 35 plus the goals, which they're going to score a couple of tries in every game, plus get the in-play kicking, which, you know, we've seen some of the biggest kicking totals put up by players in the worst teams, like Lachlan Lewis in the Bulldogs team where he was averaging about 5,000 kick meters a game. Because he was just, they were making it to the 20 and he was just hoofing it down the field. I don't think the Sharkies are going to be like that. But, you know, yeah, definitely I think 45's what I would be looking at for his conservative side for the first 6 to 8 rounds. I guess the only area of concern that I have with Chad is that you're getting put on that clock again.
Mm.
Except I think with this one, there's a lot more upside, a lot less risk, and more time. And when the one like Lodge, it was 3 to 4 weeks, and you know, and then you're really on the clock to get rid of him. Whereas Chad, we're looking at 6, 7, 8 weeks, and then even when Sean Johnson comes back, he's coming back from an Achilles injury. He's not going to be 100% fit straight away. You know, there's no reason for them to shift back immediately. You know, Chad could still average in the low 40s at that time, but by that time, he's already shot up. He's 150 to 200 grand. And you're moving him across to a guy like you can, at that point, you know, like we spoke last week, I think it was, about Luke Brooks. And Brooks has got an absolutely atrocious draw to start the year. I'm expecting his price to go down a little bit even or stay exactly where it is. You might see Chad go up by 200K. You can trade him down to Brooks in week 7 or week 8 with 100K profit and get a guy who might then kick on an average 50-plus for the second half of the year.
And, like, you know, just looking at Chad, like, he had his best ever season in 2018 when he partnered Moylan, and he averaged 43, and he wasn't goal-kicking, well, I mean, he was goal-kicking on and off throughout the season, but if you were to give him that consistent goal-kicking for the first 2 months, like, there's an easy 45 average there, and that's not even counting, you know, the pace of play nowadays.
Yeah.
You know, like I think I put a bit of a line through Chad early on because we thought Johnson was going to be back early. And then we saw that interview the other day where he was literally just laughing off reports that he was going to be back by round 5 and, you know, saying that he was going to be out a lot, you know, a little bit longer than that.
Yeah. He's sort of saying the second half of the year is sort of what where they're sort of looking at potentially to make sure you're 100%. So
yeah.
Particularly if the Sharks get up, you know, if the Sharks are winning half of their games or thereabouts, there's absolutely no reason for them to rush Johnson back. So.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of player bias around Chad. Like, it sort of reminds me a little bit of James Maloney a couple of years ago when Nathan Cleary went down. Like, you were on the wagon there.
I was the president and CEO of the James Maloney bandwagon at that point.
Yeah, but a lot of people just assumed he was going to be rubbish because that's who he'd been. You know, they didn't look at you know, some of those extra things there that he was adding.
Yeah.
So, like, it sort of gives me vibes of that, but I think he's a very good buy.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I am going to put him in my team right now. You talked me into it. So yeah. Chad Townsend is a stud. And Chad, if you're listening to this, just shoot me a message on Facebook or Twitter for where you're going to send my carton of beer.
Yeah, we're accepting your beer, Chad. Any shampoo tips you've got, mate?
Oh, gosh, yes. Actually, speaking of nothing to do with shampoo or beer, Anthony Milford. You see how slick that was? Anthony Milford, priced at 32 points, coming off probably one of the worst seasons from any half I've ever seen in my life. The Broncos were just absolutely dreadful last year, but if we took 2020 out and just pretend it didn't exist at all, Milford would be somebody that if you told any fantasy player they could get Milford at priced at 32, they would be falling over themselves to put him in their team. So, I mean, the thing is, you know, we talk a lot about recency bias, and basically that just means, for anyone that doesn't know what that means, it means remembering the most recent results. And the most recent results were Milford was just absolutely horrendous. But, you know, to start the 2020 season, I think he was 800K or something like that. And, you know, he's 427 now. Ryan, where are you with Milford?
Yeah, I think he's a very interesting one, and he's one that's sort of flying under the radar, and I don't really know why. Like, he hasn't averaged below 45 since 2015. He's a very interesting option, and I think a lot of people are just assuming the Broncos are going to be as bad as they were last year. And, well, I mean, that's a very real possibility. Maybe they will be as bad as they were last year. But I was actually surprised to see how bad Milford was in the back half of last year, because you would have assumed that, you know, these new rules would actually suit his play style. Like, he's very, you know, touch footy, like, you know, loves to step, sort of like, you know, Sean Johnson type. Yeah, I was surprised to see how bad he did. But, man, if the Broncos can just get a little bit of it together, just show what they showed in round one and two last year, if they could just put that on the park, he's a very easy, you know, 45-plus average there.
Yeah. This is the thing that I don't understand, is how a forward pack comprised of Matt Lodge, Payne Haas, Tevita Pangai Jr., David Fifita, and old mate, what's his name, Pat Carrigan, how a forward pack comprised of those players can get consistently dominated every week. You know, it's just absolutely absurd. And, like, they're getting Alex Glenn back. Jordan Rickey's going to be more than likely coming into that back row spot. They're moving Pangai back to the middle, which is they should have done that last year. This is, on paper, the Broncos are one of the better teams out if you just blanked over the 6 and 7 and the 1 and the 9. You know, like, really. So, and that's, you know, they've got Stags out injured, unfortunately. But, you know, they're forward. But there's no excuse for their forwards not to be going forward. And if they just manage to actually lay a bit of a platform for Milford, he can convert. Don't you worry about that. You know, we've seen Milford take games by the scruff of the neck and you know, run, you know, I've been on the receiving end of that as a Cowboys fan a couple of times where Milford's just absolutely destroyed us. So there's no reason. You know, last year, he was just terrible. But in the years previously, when he kicked for at least 150 kick meters, his average was well into the 45s, leading into 49.5 in 2019 at half. So it was almost a 50-point player. And that, and a couple of those, half of those games were with Dearden. So, you know, it's definitely possible that Milford's a 50-point player with these new rules if the Broncos can sort it out and even be a top half of the bottom eight team this year. You know, I think he can be a 50-point player.
Yeah, all they have to do is not be one of the statistically worst teams of all time.
Yeah.
And there's upside, I think.
Correct. I was pretty bullish on the Broncos last year. I actually had them as a top four side last year, which obviously they weren't. But they, at the end of round two, after they finished flogging the Cowboys, I was not feeling very good about it. So, yeah, definitely I've got Milford in my side at the moment. I don't necessarily see any reason why I'd take him out of it unless he doesn't play round one because he's still troubled with his finger injury. But Milford doesn't need his finger to score fantasy points anyway.
Yeah, the only reason I wouldn't pick Milford is just because I've got a man crush on Chad. Like, that's the only reason.
Oh, God. I've got both of them in there now.
Ooh.
Next guy on our list here, I don't want to harp on him too long, which is Charlie Staines. So Charlie Staines, I've seen him in a couple of teams. He's priced at 33, coming off a game where he scored, what, 4 tries in his debut last year or something?
Yeah, I think he scored 6 tries in like 1.25 games.
Yeah, yeah. Just that's unsustainable, needless to say. He's going to be playing on the wing. Panthers are not going to thrash people, and he's not going to have that opportunity every single game that he plays. He's going to have games where he's a winger and he's going to score 20-something. There's hardly any wingers that average 44 plus points per game. And I don't think Staines is the build for it.
Yeah.
That being said, if Dylan Edwards got injured and he moved to fullback, I'd absolutely be looking at him. And maybe that's something to keep in mind. What we're really hoping for is that Staines plays a couple of games on the wing, averages in the mid 20s, price drops down a little bit. And then something happens to Dylan Edwards. Maybe he swears at a referee or something like that and gets suspended for 5 or 6 weeks, and we get Staines at fullback. That's what we're looking for. Definitely not looking at a winger for a 33 break even. The next guy on our list, though, is a bit more interesting to me. And at first, when I saw his name, I vomited a little bit in my mouth. But the more that I looked at him, the more interested I was. Not necessarily interested in having him, but interested at why I didn't look at him at all. And that's Dylan Walker. So Dylan Walker comes in, priced at 24 break even. So his career since 2017, playing at center, he averages over 33. So it's not quite 34. So it's about 9.5 points of value there based on his career. But he didn't play any center at all last year with the new rules. So, mate, Dylan Walker, thoughts?
Yeah, he's interesting. He's one I'd consider. Like, I actually have probably more confidence in Dylan Walker than I do Jake Averillo at the moment.
Okay.
That said, I don't think he's a great buy. Like, he hasn't really been good since, you know, about 2016 or so, when he averaged about 38. He averaged 34.5 in 2017 at center, 23.5 from four appearances in 2018, and then 31 from seven appearances in 2019. So he hasn't really been, the Dylan Walker that is, he hasn't had that reputation that his name evokes, for quite a few years now. That said, Manly healthy are quite a different team. Like, we saw that last year when Turbo was in that team compared to when he wasn't. I think there's more attacking upside there with when they're healthy. He's an interesting one. And he does cover half. Where are you sort of sitting on him?
Yeah, I just don't really, if I was going to get Dylan Walker, I'd just get James Roberts,
Yeah.
And Roberts has got more upside. He's got better base stats. He's done it more recently. It's just not, I couldn't justify doing it just for the pod. If I was going to do that, then I'd just go all the way down to a super cheapie or whatever. I'd run what I'm running now, which is Neo and Averillo, and just not bother.
Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely putting Staines and Walker in the dud category for me. I could see why, if you were dead set, I really want a pod at centre. I guess he kind of makes sense, but not necessarily somebody that I would be recommending to people. And by the way, Milford's a stud. I forgot to do him, obviously. Tom Opacek got suggested that one right before we started recording. I wish I hadn't seen it at all, because he sucks from fantasy perspective. That's just literally what I wrote here. He sucks. So his average at center across his career is 29, currently priced at 25, doesn't do any goal kicking. He's outside Dylan Brown, who is a bulldog. And also, there's no guarantees that Obachik's even going to keep that job. So I don't sort of necessarily see any reason to expand on that more than to say don't go there.
I think you're about to say dud.
Dud, correct. Next guy on my list is also a dud, and that is Patrick Herbert. Patrick Herbert, sorry Warriors fans, but good news, he doesn't play for you anymore. His career average at center is 23.3, excluding his goal kicking. So assuming that he's actually going to make the Titans team and assuming that he's going to win the goal kicking, he's looking at somewhere between a 29 and 31 average, depending on whether you give him 6 or 8 points for the goals, currently priced at 26. So he's either got 3 or 5 points of value and sort of in a bit of a nothing area. Do you have any other thoughts than that?
Yeah, you're relying on him getting goal kicking, and even then he's only 50-50. I'm not sure if that's someone you really want to be taking a punt on.
Yeah, absolutely. Particularly when you're looking at a guy like, you got James Roberts there. Don't overthink it. Yes, 20-something percent ownership is boring, right? Well, but he's not boring. He's awesome to watch. He doesn't need goal kicking to average 35. If you want a player in that price bracket, James Roberts is your man. Don't overthink it. Patrick Herbert is a dud. Next guy on the list, Kikau. Kikau is, in actual footy terms, a very good player. But in my opinion, for fantasy, he is a dud. Coming in priced at 42, averages 42, plays inconsistent minutes. Sometimes he plays 80, sometimes he plays 55, 60 minutes. He constantly looks exhausted while he's out there. He's sort of a one big play guy. He's perfectly capable of playing 80 minutes on an edge and scoring 23 points and just standing out there like a passenger, not doing anything. As much as he looks and he is a good player, the only time that I would be looking at Kikau is if he was priced sort of in the low 30s. Disagree with any of that?
No, I agree. Like, he's not a regular 80-minute player. Like, he only played 5 80-minute games last year from 16 starts. I just don't see any upside there, especially with how good the Panthers were last year. Yeah, I just don't see it. And, they've still got, Liam Martin, Isaiah Yeo, Capewell that can all pinch second-round minutes as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you were going to look at a guy in this price bracket, I'm going a little bit out of order here just to mess with you now. Somebody that I would prefer to kick out who's a dud is Adam Elliott. Oh. So Adam Elliott at lock, he had a sort of a shortened season last year, but with the Bulldogs losing Tolman, Elliott averaged 53 in his 65-minute game, like 53 in 65 minutes in his lock starts from last year, excluding his injury-affected game. So he comes in priced at 44. If he can average that 65 minutes and average 53, that puts him as a cut-price keeper, and in my book that makes him a stud.
Okay, interesting. Do you see him getting, you know, that 65 sort of minute average again this year?
Well, he did it with Tolman in the team, and now Tolman's gone. So
yeah, good point.
You tell me, like, Hetherington's coming in, but he's not going to play the same minutes what Tolman was playing. Napa's not a big minute guy. We just spoke about Ogden, you know, not necessarily commanding big minutes. Same thing with guy like Renoff, Tumanga, who's now Renoff Atoni. They got Thompson out for the first couple of weeks, but even then, you know, I'm anticipating that Thompson can play sort of decent minutes, but, you know, it just really depends on what they want to do with their squad. They've got Raymond Vitala Mariner coming back from an injury to his ankle. He hasn't trained all off season. Even though Elliott's been in trouble with the media and he might get punished for that, I guess, is the problem. But if he's starting at lock and that team's looking like it is going to, I could see a path where somebody might want to take a punt on him.
Yeah, no, I can see what you mean looking at him. Like, there does seem to be like a little, you know, like 10 points of value there if he is getting the minutes. Yeah, and like we know what Luke Thompson's out for, what, the first 4 weeks of the season, isn't he?
Yeah, and I mean, he's probably going to do something stupid again. You know, so he's, yeah, unfortunately, he's, yeah, English, which means he's going to more than likely gouge somebody's eye out again soon. It seems to be a thing. I don't know why they, you know, just tackle him. You don't need to put your finger in their eye, mate.
It does seem like a lot of these English middles, they always end up doing something.
I don't know. And, like, the only one of them that's not like that, I think, and I'm sorry to anybody that I'm offending any English people. I'm half English, so I'm allowed to insult you. The only one that doesn't do that is Ryan Sutton.
Yeah.
And he can't get a game.
Like, do you remember Adrian Morley back in the day? Like, he just used to knee blokes in the head. Like,
yeah. You know, actually, you know, and Sam Burgess was one of those guys that was, you know, reputable for his, you know, quality tactics on the field and, you know, hardly ever playing dirty, aside from when he was on the field. Yeah, I don't know what it is with these English blokes and just wanting to take people's heads off and stuff. So, but, you know, all jokes aside, yeah, Elliott's somebody, he's interesting. He doesn't fit into my build of my team at the moment. But, you know, in that price bracket, there's not really anybody else of interest to me. Him and Arrow are about the same price. So, you know, like, I mean, we spoke about Arrow and his, you know, his biggest battle is going to be actually winning minutes. Whereas I think Elliott will be able to play basically as many minutes as he can handle as long as he stays away from Michael Leish's misses. Moving right along, next guy on our list, Josh Alloyer. So Alloyer has moved over from the Tigers to the Sea Eagles, and he is more than likely going to be their starting prop partnering the next guy that we'll speak about after this, which is Marty Tapau. Maybe we can speak about them together. So Alloyer, last year in games that he played between 45 and 60 minutes, he averaged 49.4 in 50 minutes. So basically 1 point per minute. Marty Tapau in his games last year, excluding the one injury game that he had, he averaged 52 in 47 minutes. So really what we're talking about here is how much Des Hasler hates your fantasy team.
Yeah, he's not been great for the Kapow fans out there, like, ever since he took over from Baz. Yeah, like, Alloyer is interesting. Like, I can see, you know, like, his PPM is great, like, so is Kapow's, but both of them need increased minutes. Is one of them going to, like, fill that Fenua Blake role, or are they just going to be shared around more with the bench? Like, what do you...
Well, the thing is, you got two 80-minute edge back rollers and an 80-minute lock. So there's 160 minutes to go between three guys on the bench and Tapau and Alloyer. You got Paseka, who came along pretty well last year. Jetski, who Des seems to love, and probably one, like, I guess it'd be Sipley or Boyle. And, you know, they'll probably play 15 minutes. But, you know, Paseka was a handful last year in the games where either Tapau or Fenua Blake was out. You know, he might be commanding 45 minutes a game there at that point, and then you sort it, or 40 minutes a game even. You might even have a situation where you got Tapau, Alloyer, and him playing 45 minutes each, which would just be horrendous. from a footy standpoint, it sort of makes sense to keep everybody fresh and going hard in shorter stints, even if it means the worst possible thing for your fantasy team. And, you know, maybe we can write some angry fan letters to Dez.
Oh, mate, just give us back the Kapow of old. Unleash Kapow.
Yeah. I don't understand why Jake Trbojevic can't just play 65 minutes because, you know, some, you know, sometimes they zoom in on him and he just, like, he's there like, ugh. Like, he's just like, he's just exhausted, you know, because he's just been tackling his bag out for 80 minutes. Like, do you reckon he might be more effective if you weren't just running him into the ground every game of the year? Like, you don't, he doesn't need to play 80 minutes. Give Tapau those 15 minutes. He loves it. You just tell, I reckon just Dez hates seeing offloads. Do you reckon?
He does. Like, and like, Kapow doesn't even throw like crappy offloads like Fifita where they just like plonk on the floor. Kapow, like, he'll have like four blokes on him and somehow get an arm free and he set the hooker like an extra 10 meters.
I remember there was one game, I can't remember who they played, but he sort of came on and just went absolutely like angry man Hulk to power 9,000. And he had about five guys on him. He just like lobbed it out the back to somebody and they went away and scored in the corner. I'm like, they can play like that. I think it was the game where Turbo got injured and then they were like, oh, how are we going to win this? I guess we're just going to YOLO, you know, do offloads. But that's what you need to do, mate. That's the game. That's the modern game. If you got to power throwing 27 offloads a game, guarantee you'll score more points than what you do now.
And like, even if, like, I remember Baz would occasionally put him out to the edge to regain his breath for like 10 minutes. Like, even out there, he could be effective, like beating up on some smaller halves. Like, we've seen how easily he can throw around a middle. Like, show me him throwing around a half and he'll create some attacking opportunity. But that's just common sense.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, unfortunately, you know, a lot of the times what we think coaches should do, they don't do. But that's all we can do for now. Don't get me started on Paul Green. Moving along to the next player on our list. So we're going to call both Josh Aloye and Marty Tapau studs in the real sense of the word, but in our sense of what we're doing for today, they're both duds, unfortunately. And Marty, if you're listening to this, I'm so sorry. I'm genuinely upset that I just called you a dud. I feel bad about it. The next guy on our list here, James Fisher-Harris. So departure of James Tamu sees Fisher-Harris becoming, along with Isaiah Yeo, the clear leaders of the Penrith forward pack for the year. He already plays gigantic minutes at a PPM of 0.88 in the middle. I know I harassed Offen Gyawi earlier about his 0.83 PPM or whatever, but 0.88 is different when you play the entire game almost in the middle. I can forgive you for that. Do we see any upside with Fisher-Harris?
I mean, maybe a tiny bit, but, like, how is his minutes going to increase? Like, he's already playing a stack every week. Like, and the thing with Fish is he misses, like, quite a few tackles. Like, there's, like, one week he might miss zero, but then the next week he'll miss bloody, like, eight tackles. And, you know, you've got a 38 in 60 minutes. Like, he's one of those guys that's really frustrating from a fantasy point of view because he can quite easily pump out a 1 PPM in 70 minutes, but at the other end of the spectrum, like, he could have one of those days where he misses a heap of tackles and it's the opposite. But yeah, I just don't know, like, where do those extra points come from when you're already playing 60 plus minutes a game?
Yeah, no, I don't see it. I think he could probably get to 65 minutes. He might average 52, 53, but, you know, you're seeing 2 or 3 points of upside. That's something he's a player that you can look to target later on in the season. There's no need to worry about those 1 or 2 points at the moment. There is a guy here, though, and I'm interested because he got suggested to us quite late before we started recording, and he's the same price bracket, and that's Mitch Barnett. So Mitch Barnett is also at a 50 break even, but in his games last year where he played at least 70 minutes, which is what we're expecting for this year, he averaged 59 points, and he's only priced at 50. So in his career previous to that, in his 70-plus minute games, his average was 47.9. So we're looking at an 11.1% bump on his career to date. I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that he was playing between the edge and the middle.
Yeah.
But if the Knights go with a guy on the bench who's an edge player, say like that Brody Jones or whatever his name was, and they use him out on the edge for 20, 30 minutes and have Barnett basically coming to the middle to fill maybe the 20 minutes that Connor Watson doesn't play if he doesn't go the whole 80, and there's been some information around that. But, you know, we know Barnett's going to play big minutes either way. At 50 points, are you seeing an avenue for him to go to, you know, somewhere close to that 59 that he did this year?
I think he's one to keep an eye on. Like when if he was playing just on the edge for 80 minutes, I'd say no way. Like he's would almost be overpriced if he was just playing on the edge. If he's moving into the middle for a little bit, I can definitely see why someone wouldn't want to take a bit of a punt on him. Like he's a real workhorse when he's in the middle. You know, and as someone who famously captained Mitch Barnett once, but
Was it the game he got like 6 points?
I think he got like 30 or something.
I'm sure it was 6 points.
It was pretty traumatic nonetheless, but
it's certainly an interesting one. I like it as a pod. Like if you wanna put him down as your gamble guy, I support you. It's not for me, but if your team supports you having a crack at somebody that's a bit of a pod, I could see why you would want to do Barnett. Next guy on the list here is Liam Martin. Not quite sure why he's on the list. So just going back, are we giving him a start or a dud, Barnett?
It depends. Depends how big your balls are, I think.
I'm going to give him a start. I'm going to rubber stamp him as a stud.
Bang.
I love it. I think the big thing is he's grown a lot as a player. He used to be a little bit like that Pangai sort of constantly in trouble, just being a moron, and he seems to have grown out of that. I really like him. I think he won their players' player 2 years ago or whatever. So I think he's a stud. I like it.
Yes.
Definitely prefer him to the next couple of guys anyway, the next three. I'm going to lump them all in together because they're all duds. Liam Martin's definitely a dud. He's a dud in both senses of the word. 60-minute back row starts last year. Average 47, priced at 45. That's working on the assumption that he's even going to start in the back row, because the only times he did was when Capewell was out injured and coming back from his injury. Their first choice back row pairing was Kikau and Capewell last year before Capewell got injured. So, mate, Liam Martin, are you inspired at all by him, or
want to just
move along?
He seems like a dud. Like, where's the upside? Like, you know, he averaged 45 last year. He didn't have any games that were affected by injury that's dragging down his average. There's a chance, even if he does start, he doesn't play 80 like we talked about with Kikau. Yeah, let's just move along.
Yeah, okay. He's a dud. Next two guys on the list are studs in the actual sense of the word, but for fantasy, they're both duds for the start of the year, and that's Cameron Murray and Tyson Frizzell. I'm going to speak about them a little bit together. So Tyson Frizzell coming off by far his career best year. I actually tipped Frizzell as a pod last year and everybody told me I was a moron, and then he averaged 55. So to everybody in the fantasy lounge that told me that Frizzell sucked, I'm awesome and you are not awesome.
You're modest.
And I'm modest. That's one of my best qualities, is I'm modest. So long story short is I heard on the Talking League pod the other day, they were talking about the fact that Frizzell was basically used as a battering ram last year because the Dragons were so bad and they're going to be even worse this year, but let's not go back into that. But they said, you know, they were talking to one of the staff for the Knights anyway, and they were basically saying that they were going to start using Frizzell's ball skills because he was quite skillful as a ball player out on the edge to create opportunities and that sort of stuff. And basically all I'm hearing with that is he's going to be doing less hit ups, which is I like to call the Gerbo effect. And yeah, I would be surprised if he averages 50 this year with this new what they're looking to do with him. Cameron Murray averaged 54 points last year. He's awesome, but you know, his career lock starts when he plays between 50 and 65 minutes, his average is 54, which is exactly what he did last year. And you know, he had 2019, we had a massive try scoring rate in there. He was on the Talking League pod the other day. I'm really loving these Talking League pods, actually, if I'm being honest. They get some really good, like, little bits in there, and if as long as you know how to read it, you can get some really good stuff. And mate, basically what they said, they actually interviewed Murray himself, and he said, "I used to be worried about how many minutes I played, but I don't really worry about that anymore, and I'm going to be looking for quality minutes over quantity minutes this year." The sirens, like the air raid sirens, was just going off for me. Like, woo, no, like, yeah, he's going to be another one. I can see him dipping down in the high 40s this year.
Yeah, that screams run away, doesn't it, when you hear quality, not quantity. For Ben, screams run away.
Absolutely. I like, you know, yeah, just I couldn't understand any reason why anybody would want to go anywhere near Murray to start this year. He's absolutely somebody I'm going to be looking at for an upgrade target later on in the season once I know exactly what his minutes and role is. But depending on what it is, I might not even be interested at that point. So, yeah, love Cameron Murray. Fantastic looking bloke, obviously. Seems like a good guy, but for fantasy this year, he's going to be a dud until we know what his role is. Now, we have a nice little group of three players here that we're going to finish out with, but since we've been recording, we've had another couple of nominations. And Ryan, I just want to get your flash thoughts without doing any research on these guys, and we'll test it to see how good you're looking.
Okay.
All right. Jazz Tavanga, give me your thoughts.
Great player. I love him. I had him last year. Exciting to watch. Too many middles at the Warriors, and I don't see the upside.
Agree. Ash Taylor.
Ooh, that's interesting. Yeah, I can't say I've really looked at Ash. He's never really been he's never really set the world on fire fantasy wise. I'm not sure what he's priced at, but even then, I can't see myself grabbing him when I'd assume Fogarty's probably going to dominate the in play kicking.
Yeah, and mate, and that's the thing. It's another one of these talking league ones. And man, I'm really giving them a bloody. Anyone would think that they were sponsoring us or something.
They should be.
Hey, TK, if you want to sponsor us, mate, we're here. We only get paid in cartons of Chad's beer, though. Ash Taylor, Jamal Fogarty said, me coming into the team freed Ash up to play what's in front of him, which basically means I'm going to do all the work, and if you see a gap, try to take advantage of it. And that is not something that you want from a fantasy player. Definitely not really interested in Ash Taylor. Let's see if there's anybody else here. Luciano Leilua. He's a bit like in the Frizzell camp, I think, coming off a career, by far a career best year. He was awesome last year, Luciano. I'm really sad I sold him when I did because he went up even way further than where I sold him. I jumped off him way too early. Mate, do you see any upside in going to Luciano playing next to his brother?
Yeah, I don't know. I sort of saw him as around like that. Like I was like you, I jumped off too early. I should have known better. I should have known he was going to score 100 against the Broncos because everybody does.
Poor Broncos.
I don't know. I don't know how he improves upon a 53 average from last year. Like that was just insane.
Yeah, no, I love Luciano. Don't really see any upside unless the Tigers turn into like a top four team randomly. And then, you know, he just goes absolutely ham on the tries and offloads and attacking stats, which it's entirely possible. But, yeah, I'd like to see something absolutely ridiculous from the Tigers. And I'll tell you what, I'll update you, John Ross. That's a cool name, by the way. Except you never know about people with two first names. It can go one or two ways, you know. John Ross, I will update you if my opinion changes on Luciano, but at the moment Luciano is a dud. Cardi, why are you bringing up Mitchell Pearce? No, Mitchell Pearce, obviously his missed tackle stats have started going through the roof as he's gotten older. Entirely understandable. Pearce is still a good player, but I don't necessarily see any reason why you'd want to go there. Do you have anything to add to that?
Mate, you've been on like the head of the Mitch Pearce fan club the last couple of years, and I keep trying to talk you out of it, like even 2019, 2018. And if you're finally off now, then I don't know why anyone else would be on.
Yeah, no, no, thank you. But he's actually a good segue into our halves here because the three guys that we want to speak about is Jamal Fogarty, Mitch Moses, and Kyle Flanagan. So in order of price, Fogarty's priced at 50, Flanagan at 54, and Moses at 57. So I had a little bit of a look at Moses and Fogarty, and I'm going to let you do Flanagan because he's your boy. So I actually put up an article about Fogarty earlier in the week, comparing him with Moses. Not comparing with Moses, comparing him with Munster. So Fogarty, after his first half of the season, once he actually sort of started finding his feet, Brimson came back and the Titans started performing well. He averaged 54.5 points, excluding any goal kicking. So on the assumption that Herbert is in the team, we're more than likely going to see Herbert doing the goal kicking because he's statistically much better than Fogarty. But if Herbert isn't selected, Fogarty's their next best goal kicker. So he could realistically, I'm actually really praying that Herbert doesn't get selected because you're looking at a 60-point half there.
Yeah, he's quite interesting. Because I remember when we did our Titans episode, you sort of wrote him off, and I was like, oh, I can make a bit of a case for him, but I'm not sure. And now it seems like you're all in on the Jamal train.
Mate, I just took Munster out of my team yesterday and put Fogarty in. So, yeah, I'm all in. I've put all my chips in the middle, and usually if I'm all in, it means I'm about to go broke. But,
yeah
no, mate, I can definitely see the appeal for Fogarty. Like I said, I've got him at the moment. If he's goal-kicking, I'll definitely have him. At the moment, the reason why I changed him from Munster is because I needed that 5K to balance my team, and I've now got a perfectly built team with $0 available in salary cap, which is obviously going to be ruined after the trials this weekend. but for now, it's working really well. So, yeah, Fogarty's definitely somebody that I'm interested in. Mitch Moses is a funny one. So he did have the one injury-affected game last year. He's priced at 57. If you take out that injury-affected game, his average goes up to 59. But in 14 games last year, he only managed to get 5 try assists, which obviously is well below the standard of where an elite half is. I would expect him to be closer to 10, particularly considering how good the Eels were. Given that last year the Eels ended up playing a lot to the left, and that could have something to do with the fact that between Dylan Brown and Jennings, they're two of the biggest ball hogs in the NRL, so they sort of the ball ended up staying over there. Plus, I think Gutherson has a bit of a preference to that left side sweep. If those try assists can even out, plus Moses can stay on the park, obviously he's not going to be playing Origin unless Cleary goes down. Any interest in Moses?
I mean, I can see why someone would want to consider him. Like, he's probably the cheapest of the, you know, elite gun halves. Like, he's cheaper than Cherry Evans by 100K and cheaper than Cleary by about 200. So, I mean, if you wanted a guy to set and forget in your halves for the rest of the year and you didn't really want to take a punt on, you know, like a Chad or a Lachlan Lamb or whoever, I can see why someone would maybe want to do that. But, you know, we saw the emergence of Dylan Brown last year. Do you really think he's going to go backwards? So, I don't know. Yeah.
I think I would take Moses before I took Cherry Evans, but I wouldn't take either of them personally.
Even if Cherry Evans grabs the goal kicking, if Garrick's
I just don't like him. Like, I think he has grown on me as a person, but I haven't quite forgiven him for knocking me out of the fantasy playoffs a couple of years ago. No, I don't know. Look, I think with Turbo coming back, he's going to have less responsibility. They're going to get Kieran Foran or Josh Schuster in there, which they're going to take the pressure off him. You know, Dylan Walker or whoever else they had at 5'8 last year was just an absolute abomination. They need to get some other guys who can do stuff. Cherry was doing absolutely everything last year, and I don't think he's going to need to do that this year. Either way, whether it's Foran or Schuster at 6 and the other one possibly even at 9, I think that it's not going to be all on DCE. I can see him actually – I can see Moses averaging more than DCE this year.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, that's me personally. But, like, you know, if I'm going to do one of those, I'm getting Fogarty or Munster. I've got Munster at 56 as a projection, 56, 57, and I've got Moses at 59, 60. So there's seven – I'm paying 7 extra points for Moses to get a couple less points value. Like, it's sort of the numbers don't really make sense for me.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
I'd rather spend the money elsewhere.
Yeah, no, understandable.
Mate, take us home. In the last player, before we get there, I think we're going to give both. I'm definitely going to give Fogarty a stud. I'm willing to give Moses a stud if you're happy with Moses being called a stud.
I mean, he's obviously a fantasy stud. It's just whether there's enough value there you want to take a punt on him.
I can see a couple of points.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, like, this is the thing. Like, if we're calling Angus Crichton or Ryan Madison a stud, definitely. You know, Moses got some clear upside there with taking out the injury-affected game, and then 3 or 4 extra try assists would bump him up and tick him over the 60 bracket. So, yeah, I can. Oh, I mean, do not let me talk myself into starting with Moses.
Are you changing your halves again, mate?
Do not let me start talking myself into Moses. He's a stud, and I'm not buying him, and nobody let me start with him. Last guy on the list. Take us home. Kyle Flanagan. Tell me about him.
Yes, if you've stuck through to the end, you're in for a treat here. I'm about to take you on a journey into Kyle Flanagan land until Mark probably crushes my enthusiasm at the end of it. So the reason I started looking at Flanagan was because I was looking at Averillo and, you know, I was trying to decide, like, is he a good buy? And, you know, I noticed in his 2 games he started at 5'8 last year, he had 63 and 10 kick meters. So his halves partners in those games had 430, and 726. Now, like, obviously that's just abnormal. It's absurd. Like, Lachlan Lewis only played 22 minutes in that game and he had 335 kick meters. And then Wakeham came on for the last 58 and had 391. Like, just absurd. Mm. But, like 400, I don't think is out of the realm of possibility. Like, Flanagan in 2020, he averaged 258 kick meters. So, like, I can see, you know, some points, some additional points there. Like, if he's going to be the dominant play in-play kicker, which we believe he will, like, I think there's some value there. And then, like, I started thinking, like, another reason why I wrote Flanagan off was because, you know, he played for the Roosters, he scored a lot of tries, and, you know, he's definitely going to go backwards. And I started looking, and he only scored 4 tries last year from 18 games, and I think I had that narrative in my head because there was 3 games in a row he scored a try each week. So I think that's where I sort of built that narrative from, and so I was like, okay, well, you know, maybe there's some improvement there, or at the very least, he can probably maintain that. Like, 4 tries in 18 games isn't impossible. And from there, I started looking at his try assist rate, and his try assist rate was 0.6. And I think from just looking at tries, if you see a try scoring rate at 0.6, you think, oh, that's absurd. Like, that's, you can't keep that up. And then I started looking at other halves, and Lachlan Lewis and Mitch Pearce last year had the exact same try assist rate as Kyle Flanagan. And, like, to put it in perspective, like, Cleary's was 0.8, DCE was 0.9. Like, even Lachie Lewis and Flanagan's halves partners, Foran and Cleary, both had a try assist rate of 0.9. So, I mean, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that, you know, he's pushing a 60 average next year with goal kicking. Like, Lewis, in his Lewis played 8 80-minute games last year under the new rules and averaged 56. He averaged 422 kick meters in those games. So, you know, Flano's a great goal kicker. Like, he averages 80%. You know, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that Flanagan, you know, is pushing a 60 average next year or this year.
So what you're saying is he's a dud.
That's really just a projective.
I just zoned out through that whole thing. Can you repeat all of that? No, I'm just kidding. Mate, I'm seeing where you're coming from here with Flanagan. The eye test would tell me that Kyle Flanagan is a better player than Lachlan Lewis. Not to mention the Bulldogs for the last couple of years have just been really bad. And, you know, they've signed Corey Allen, they've signed Nick Kotrick, they've got, you know, guys coming in. Their forwards are looking pretty thin this year, which leads me to believe that maybe Flanagan might be doing a little bit of the hoof it from the 20 meter down the field early stuff, which is not necessarily a bad thing. So for his fantasy scoring anyway, for actual footy, it's not real good. But, mate, what's the Bulldogs draw looking like early?
Yeah, I had a look at it last night. Like, I think it's pretty up and down. Like, it's hard team, good team. Like, they go Knights, Panthers, Broncos, Bunnies, Storm, Cowboys. So, like, it's sort of, you know, top of the draw, bottom of the draw sort of stuff.
Yeah, no, Storm are pretty bad. I definitely can see that. Cowboys, top of the draw. Yeah, I get it. Makes sense. No, mate, I'm with you. All right, I'm gonna be keeping a close eye on our stud Kyle Flanagan as an option to put him in to the team through the trials. What's his actual price? I know he's 726. Oh my god, that's it's 60 grand. We're at 60 grand for Fogarty up. Okay, that's interesting. All right, cool. I love it. I think he's a stud. Yeah, so yeah. We did get one more through while I've been waiting here. Mate, Tevita Pangai.
Oh.
That noise. I'm just taking you from the absolute high of Kyle Flanagan. You're like, right, yes, yes. You know, we're blasting off into the atmosphere and then, oh.
I'm really excited. Like, now you're bringing me down.
Oh, gosh, no. Mate, if I'm being 100% honest with you, and I'm not trying to upset you here, I actually don't hate Pangai. I normally wouldn't bring up Supercoach, but I have a Supercoach team as well, and I actually put Pangai in my Supercoach team with the news that he's coming into the middle this year. So, mate, if you look at what Pangai's done as a middle forward in the past, he's been pretty good as from a PPM perspective, and I actually reckon that I just said that without even looking at his stats, and they're nowhere near as good as what I thought that they were. So, mate, what I'm looking at here is 67, his best performance in the middle here, 67 minutes for 47 points, which is not not filling me with a lot of enthusiasm.
Are you looking at just his lock stats, or are you looking at prop as well?
Just middle.
Okay.
Forward. So taking out the back row stuff.
I had last year he played two games at prop, and he scored 80 in 50 minutes with a try and a 60 in 62 minutes.
Okay.
So that was under new rules. That's the only two games in the middle under new rules.
Right. And he's already priced at 50-something, isn't he? 55. Yeah. No, mate. Sorry to Vincent Nuku. He is a dud.
Mm.
Yeah. Pains me to say it, and I'm going to take him out of my super coach team. Really disappointing. So, Ryan, no pre-discussion about this.
Okay.
Who do you want to give the shout-out to for the best pod option, aside from yourself coming up with Kyle Flanagan?
From who we discussed today?
All the players that we discussed.
All the players we discussed? Probably outside of Flanagan, probably Milford, I'd say. Like, he's only 3% ownership.
Yeah, that was me. So, mate, yeah, that's me. My favourite person from all the guys that have asked us between Facebook and Twitter would be Mitch Barnett, I reckon.
Ooh.
Yeah, Dominic Cornish. I don't care what Ryan says. I think he's a good option.
So, hey, I've captained him before.
you get our personalised shout-out for Pot of the Day.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I love it. It's certainly not David Fusatua, who somebody suggested, that's for sure. All right. So, Ryan,
yes.
In summary, pretty much everybody that we spoke about today is a dud. It's like 80% duds.
Yeah, bar a couple there that we think are good buys, like a couple of halves.
Yeah, mate, yeah. I guess the moral of the story is don't overthink it. There's players that are high ownership for a reason. Typically, that means that they're a good option. You do have to find a couple of pods in there, and you also have to find a couple of antipods. You have to identify which of those players out there are going to be traps. Last year, perfect example, Liam Knight. Liam Knight was like 27, 28% ownership or something like that. Everyone was projecting, oh, yeah, he's going to get all these extra minutes, PPM, blah, blah, blah. And he sucked. He was like even worse than a dud last year. And 2021, Liam Knight, who is it, Ryan?
We're probably going to cop a bit of hate. I reckon it's Tino.
It is Tino. Tino is the Liam Knight of 2021. Tino is going to finish 2021 worth less money than what he is right now to start the year.
Get your bets on win the Dally M right now.
That's my prediction. Less money than what he's worth right now.
I agree with you, but that's it. We're so far deep in here that Tino's good that the podcast is over if he averages 50.
If he comes out and scores a double, our DMs are just going to be absolutely, you know, and they're playing the Warriors in week one. It could happen. As we all know, Warriors are strong contenders for the spoon with the Dragons.
Hey. This is a pro-Warriors podcast.
Mate, that dude on NRL Fantasy Talk is going to be absolutely hammering me this week.
The amount of Kiwi listeners we have, this is a pro-Warriors podcast.
Mate, he's really unhappy every time I speak negatively about the Warriors. I'm a fan. I love one-eyed fans. I'm the biggest one-eyed Cowboys fan you'll ever meet, and I don't hold a lot of hope for the Cowboys this year, which hopefully means that they're going to do well. But, yeah, Warriors fans, do not hold your breath for a big year, please.
I've got a Warriors jersey in my cupboard, actually, that you bought me. I'll be cheering them on.
Oh, if the Warriors beat the Titans in round one, I will buy a Warriors jersey.
Yes, we could take a photo together in our Warriors jerseys.
But the Tino has to score a try in that game. No, not really. No, I'll just buy one anyway. He's not going to. He probably will score a try, but yeah. No, I. Yeah. Anyway.
Cool.
All part of the fun. Sorry,
back tomorrow for the trials.
I really want the Warriors to do well. I just don't think they're going to. I feel bad every time I say it. Yeah, cool. All right. Well, thanks very much for listening to us gob off for the last hour and a bit. I'm assuming it'll be probably close to an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining in and just for being awesome, because we're getting so many listens and comments and interactions and stuff on our posts. We have been inspired, and the Scotch may have added to this, but I've been inspired to suggest to Ryan that we do a second podcast this weekend. So we're also going to watch the Indigenous All-Star game and a couple of those trials this afternoon, and then come back to you with some feedback on what we saw from the games that have already been played and the ones that are going to be played this afternoon. So tune in to our second episode of this weekend for that.
Cool. See you then, guys.